Okay, well, we'll get underway. Sorry, we're a little late in starting. I'll just introduce Mr. Mohamed Taltik, Ambassador for Egypt, who's going to make a few opening remarks on behalf of the delegation and introduce the other members. And we'll then take your questions.
We need another chair for the Syrian ambassador, I think.
Right.
Okay, we'll bring one.
And we'll look to finish in about 30 minutes or so.
Do I need to?
That's mine for recording, so that's fine. It's working.
Okay. Well, good morning, everyone. Thank you very much for coming. Let me introduce this group first. My name is Mohamed Taufik. I'm the ambassador of Egypt. My colleague Saeed Shamsi, he is the ambassador of the UAE. My colleague Izzat Abdel Hadi, the ambassador of Palestine. And my colleague Tamam Soleiman, the ambassador of Syria. And my colleague Yusuf Sabah, the chargé d'affaires of Kuwait. We started our meeting yesterday. We had a wonderful meeting with Her Excellency the Prime Minister. Basically, the reason why we came here is we wanted, A, to express our appreciation for New Zealand and the principled role and the principled approach that the government of New Zealand has taken in international affairs. We feel that this is a particularly sensitive time for world peace. And unfortunately, for our region, world peace starts in the Middle East. And it was important for us to discuss with the Prime Minister our views for peace in the Middle East, which we did at some length. We also expressed interest in strengthening the relations that exist between the Arab world and New Zealand. This, basically, we dealt with a whole range of issues. We started with economic cooperation, and we noted that there is a certain complementarity in our economies, which really opens the way for an expanded relationship. We noted the importance of partnerships. We noted that we have a number of high-level visits from New Zealand coming to our region. I think as early as in a few days from now, maybe next week, Minister Phil Goff will be coming to the region and will be coming to Egypt. And we certainly welcome that visit. We feel, of course, it's up to the private sector really to promote the economic cooperation, but the governments have a role to do in encouraging the private sector and in showing the way. And I think all our governments are interested in that regard. We also spoke about areas of cooperation such as education. We have many students from our countries are coming over here. You have first-class education. And you treat our students very well. So we also spoke about tourism. We have tourism going both ways. And we spoke about the importance of cultural dialogue. The dialogue between different cultures and civilizations is an issue in which, on our side and on your side, we are very interested. And in that regard, we spoke also about cultural exchanges. And I mentioned that next Saturday here in Wellington, there will be an Egyptian of, an exhibition of ancient Egyptian artifacts will be opening at Te Papa. And certainly I invite everyone to go and have a look at that. We also talked about, and this, I'll finish my opening remarks right now. We also talked about one of the niche areas that New Zealand has been very active in, and that is the area of nuclear disarmament. New Zealand, with a number of other countries, including our countries, we have really helped in shaping the international conscience as to the essential nature of nuclear disarmament. And it is true that, unfortunately, much of what we've been calling for has not been achieved and has not been implemented. But at least there is gradual understanding that what we have been saying for many years is essential for world peace. And the question of nuclear disarmament is one that is becoming more and more pressing and requires the efforts of all the countries of the world, and certainly New Zealand has been playing a leadership role in that regard in cooperation with our nations. This was a very brief introduction, and we're all available here to your questions.
You said at the beginning of the introduction that you discussed your views on the sensitive period of the history of peace and what your views were. Could you expand a little bit on what you told the Prime Minister about what your views are, about what ought to happen?
Let me say a very quick remark, but then I'll ask my colleague, the Ambassador of Palestine, to expand. Basically, we feel that at the heart of the problems in the Middle East is the Arab-Israeli conflict. And the Arab world has extended its hand in peace. We have made a commitment to peace, all the countries of the Arab world. And we have said we are willing to live in peace with Israel within the context of a two-state solution based upon the 1967 borders. And this was the basis for discussion, but my colleague, the Ambassador of Palestine, I think would like to expand a little bit on that.
Well, thank you. I will not add a lot. I think this was a very clear message that we have now a commitment as Arab states indeed to establish a sustainable, acceptable, and just peace, decent just peace in the region based on the vision of the two-state solution and different international legitimacy resolutions and international humanitarian law. This is the focal point for any sustainable peace in the region. And we told the Prime Minister yesterday that if New Zealand and the international community really interested in achieving, establishing a sustainable, decent peace in the region, this should be based in the international humanitarian law and international legitimacy. This is really an important issue. And also it should be based, and this is very important, on the Arab initiative. And I'd like really to seize this opportunity to tell you about this important initiative, which all the Arab states committed themselves to implement it in 2002, which talked about full normalization of relations, linkages, ties with Israel. And this is the first time that we have this commitment from Arab states. It's not only to recognize Israel, it's also to normalize relations with Israel in exchange for full withdrawal from all the Arab-occupied territories. Unfortunately, the Israeli leadership did not grasp this golden opportunity at that time and considered that it's not serious, and they did not deal with it. And now some of the Israeli leadership, indeed, talking about this initiative, they start considering it, which is a good, positive, indeed, indicator. So we have a potential prospects to establish a peace process. There is an opportunity now to do that. And both leaderships, Arab leadership and Israeli leadership, I think now realize that military solution to this conflict will not lead to anywhere. And the only the resumption of negotiations and return back to negotiating table is the only solution to this prolonged conflict.
So what in particular would you like the New Zealand government to do in supporting of this initiative? I mean, is there some action that you've been seeking?
Yeah. I think, as also we mentioned to the Prime Minister, that we really appreciate the even-handed policy of New Zealand. New Zealand as a transparent, frank country, through their own engagement in the multilateral system, and in particular in the United Nations, I think they can play a role, because they have close relations with different parties in the regions. They are more than Israel and the United States, and I think based on this capacity, indeed, they can play a role.
But how likely is negotiation rather than the military action? I mean, we continue to see military intervention in the Middle East.
I think now we have a long-term truce. We have very good news last week that Palestinians and Israelis reach an agreement, indeed, to stop all kinds of hostilities. This is a very important indicator, a positive indicator to resume the peace talks again and to start the implementation of any peace initiatives such as to convene a sort of international conference to solve the problem based on the European initiative or to return back to bilateral negotiation between Israel and Palestine. So now I think we are in a position to start thinking of the resumption of the talks again.
Doesn't Gaza remain essentially under siege, though, at present?
Yeah, of course. I mean, it's unfortunately, as mentioned by different academics, even, and politicians, that it's an open-air prison, people suffering a lot there, it's institutionalized, sealed, economic situation is really bad, poverty rate is more than 80% now. It's totally under siege. And I think we should ask the international community to intervene directly, indeed, especially the United Nations, to provide different supplies to the Palestinians there in Gaza, and try to really release the people there and open the borders to Egypt and also to the West Bank.
I mean, you're being optimistic here, but I mean, the reality of the situation, as I understand it, is that the European Union and the United States and most of the aid donors have told the Hamas government that unless it recognises Israel, they won't support it. And the current situation of Gaza being under siege leads to militancy and the likelihood of a resumption of hostilities, I would have thought.
I think this is an internal challenge for Palestinians, and we are in process to indeed to reconcile between different factions, and there is a decent efforts is taking place between the president and the prime minister, who represents Hamas, to form and establish the Palestinian National Unity government. I hope we'll succeed. Still, this process on. If not, of course, I mean, Palestinians will look for other options to respond to the needs and priorities of our own people. Nobody can afford the situation now. I mean, and even the Israeli leadership. And we think that we will really reach a solution soon. So in spite of this pessimism and gloomy situation, there are a lot of attempts now to maintain the situation and to resume the talks and then to lift the international blockade on Palestinians.
Recently, there's been discussion of a prisoner swap in relation to Corporal Shalit. Is that progressing, to your understanding?
I think it's progressing, but maybe my colleague, Egyptian, of course, Egypt is playing a crucial role in this bargaining process and negotiations. And I think we are very close, I mean, to an agreement in which 1,400 Palestinians will be released in exchange for the kidnapped, abducted the Israeli soldiers. So I think we are reaching a solution now.
So I'd like to add to that certainly yes, there is the talks are ongoing. I think they're dealing with some of the details as to who would be released and when, and some detailed issues. But the main thrust of our thinking is that now we have a situation in which the parties are indirectly talking to each other and negotiating. And we would like to make use of this situation to push forward a larger political process. So this is what we're trying to achieve. We hope that certainly we can achieve that, as the ambassador said. The first step, which is to have a ceasefire in Gaza, seems to be working. So certainly, if we take a step-by-step approach, we may be able to push the process forward. I think what has become clear now to everyone is that military solutions don't work. And once everyone realizes this, then maybe people will be willing to be more reasonable about it.
Well, some of the news reports indicate that the Israelis believe that the existing military solutions won't work, but they're now working on sort of a new kind of military solution, which they may decide to implement in the future if they don't achieve what they're seeking in their current negotiations.
I think, adding to what my colleague said, I'm ambassador of Syria, the root cause of the problem in the region is occupation, because all solutions really tend to look at issues which are far from the real situation, because they want, for example, the resistance, Palestinian resistance to cease, and they don't look really question Israel's responsibility in this matter. They ask, for example, Hamas to recognize Israel while Israel does not recognize the Palestinian rights. So there are many things, really, and we should really look at things across the board. We should really put all responsibilities for all states. Of course, the Arab countries have a responsibility to achieve, but also equally, if not more than that, because Israel is the aggressor party, and Israel has the responsibility for the Palestinians' right to return, for withdrawing from the occupied territories according to the United Nations Security Council resolutions, and always Israel, of course, depicts itself as being the victim, while the Arabs are the victim now. More than 9,000-10,000 Palestinians are in the Israeli jails, and the members of parliament and the Palestinian members of the government are in the Israeli jails, and they both jailed because Israel claims that they want a good partner for negotiations. And actually, both ministers from Fatah and Hamas are in jail, which means that Israel doesn't want peace. If Israel was serious in peace, then they should grasp the opportunities which were given to Israel many times. In Beirut summit in 2002, the Arabs collectively and on summit level, not only the Arab countries which are involved directly with the Arab-Israeli conflict, submitted peace to Israel. All Arab countries collectively and on summit level submitted peace to Israel on a tray of gold. And the Israeli response was, in less than 24 hours, yes, Israel responded by the massacre of Jenin, for which the Secretary General Kofi Annan dispatched Terry Larson to investigate the crimes. So Israel really is practicing on the Arabs state terrorism. And Israel is, in the last war on Lebanon, this is state terrorism war against Lebanon, and 1,300 people were obliterated, and aside from the devastation of the country, of infrastructure. And we need to ask the question that we should ask Israel to hold its responsibilities, and we shouldn't really continue to treat Israel as above the law. Israel should be subject like all other countries, like New Zealand, like Syria, like Egypt, Lebanon, Palestine. All countries are subject to international law. And here I want to... yesterday's meeting with the Prime Minister was a very useful, very good meeting, really, and we highly appreciate, like my colleague said, the independent position that New Zealand is taking in the international arena. And Syria, for one, highly regards the courageous position that New Zealand took regarding the unfortunate incident of the Israeli involvement in New Zealand matters when the forgery of the passports done by the Israeli Mossad last year. We highly regard New Zealand's integrity and in New Zealand's independence in resolving this matter and in taking courageous positions, really, which should be a model to follow for many Western leaders.
You were speaking about the Arab Initiative. Clearly that predates the election of Hamas government in Palestine. I mean, is the Hamas government in Palestine committed to the initiative?
Of course, with respect to my colleague, I will give him the floor. I just want to say that Hamas election, this is election that was done under the supervision of a former U.S. President, Jimmy Carter, who said that this is the most democratic election I have ever seen. And I think that if we should respect democracy, then we should respect the choice of people. So if democracy is the choice of people, then we should respect what the Palestinian people chose by electing Hamas as leader of the Palestinian people and government. And the same answer applies, really, whether Israel is, of course, we ask Hamas and Arab countries to recognize Israel, but at the same time, the same question should be at par questioned whether Israel is recognizing the Palestinian rights and the Arab rights. Because Israel withdrew from Gaza, of course, went back to Gaza, but withdrew just to settle the whole Palestinian question because they consider Gaza a burden, and they didn't at least declare their intention to negotiate about the West Bank, which tells you that Israel does. We ask, okay, I agree with you that we should ask Hamas, but we should also ask Israel whether they really, whether they are willing for peace and whether they recognize the Arab stolen rights and Arab usurped rights.
Let's differentiate between the political position for the government and Hamas position. This is important. Our official position, indeed, is to recognize the Arab initiative. This is also the position of the President of Palestine, Mahmoud Abbas. And within the discussion now between the President and Prime Minister, they agree that the political program of President should be implemented, indeed, because he is also the head of the Palestinian Liberation Organization, which really adopted the vision of the two-state solution and accepted the Arab initiative. So I think this is a very important point, because Hamas is a faction, so it's up to them if they want to, I mean, recognize Israel or to accept the Arab initiative. But now we're talking about an official governmental position, you know, in Palestine. The second issue is Hamas themselves indeed expressed their own interest to discuss, I mean, the Arab initiative. And they held a lot of consultation, discussion with different Arab leaders. And through this consultation process and debate, we have a lot of progress. As an example, Hamas accepted now the concept of establishing an independent Palestinian state on the 1967 occupied territories. This is a very important position, indeed. In addition, of course, they, for the last, indeed, 24th month, they were very disciplined on the ceasefire truce, and also they proposed, I mean, to have long-term truce with Israel. And I think through this consultation, discussion, debate, Hamas as a responsible party, they try also to indeed to adapt their own political positions and to be more realistic, I mean, within the international politics and the new realities. So this is now the situation in which we have a national debate. We have also an Arab debate. And I think the also Arab leadership and leaders are mature enough, indeed, to include Hamas in this process, to receive them and to talk to them about the prospects of peace. And as a Palestinian ambassador to Palestine, indeed, I'd like really to thank all the Arab leaders inclusively, indeed, for their own intensive efforts, indeed, to promote the peace process and to engage in bridging gaps between different Palestinian parties.
So in your discussions, excuse me, I'd like to add a point just as a direct reply to your question. The Arab peace initiative was first put forward in the Beirut summit in 2002. But in every single summit since then, it has been reiterated. So it still stands, and it is still being reiterated by the Arab League at all levels.
In your discussions with the Prime Minister, did you seek any specific commitments about what more New Zealand could do diplomatically in terms of pushing the peace process in the Middle East?
Actually, New Zealand has been very forthright and very principled in its approach, and our message was that we appreciate that position. We have never requested New Zealand to be one-sided or to take sides. What our position was, and certainly this is what New Zealand has been doing, is taking an independent, pragmatic, and open-minded and principled position. And certainly we appreciate that. Regarding pushing the peace process forward, of course our governments are in the region and we are actively involved in that. But it was important for us to come here to tell the New Zealand government we appreciate that at least, first of all, you're interested in our part of the world, which is very far away from you, but you're still interested and you're still engaged and you're still in partnership with us for peace. And we just would like to thank you for that.
In relation to that, Moshe Yaalon a warrant was issued for his arrest in New Zealand last week, and then that was the stay was executed by the Attorney General. Did you have any comments to make to the Prime Minister about that?
No, that issue was not discussed.
No, I think there was a legal process. I really appreciate and respect, I mean, the role of law here in New Zealand. I think this was very strong commitment to the international humanitarian law. And it has been preceded by different human rights organizations in New Zealand and in Palestine. And this is not the first case, indeed. In London, we have a lot of also cases, legal cases against Israelis as war criminals. And I think Palestinian human rights organizations will continue this process, indeed, in the future.
Did you discuss Iraq and your meeting with the Prime Minister?
Actually, the ambassador of Iraq was not able to be with us on this trip, and therefore there was not an opportunity to go into the details of Iraq. But I think the general sentiment that was put forward was that we all wish the best for Iraq. We are not happy to see Iraq in a situation that is unstable. And we certainly grieve for the loss of life, but we feel that it's important that Iraqis work together in order to protect their territorial integrity and their unity. And certainly Iraq is a country that deserves a peaceful and prosperous future. And as Arabs, we are committed to do what we can to help with that process.
Was Lebanon discussed, the current situation, by the Prime Minister? No.
In Iraq, you mean?
Lebanon. The protests there at the moment. Was that discussed?
No. Well, would any of my...
Please.
Well, Lebanon... The ambassador of Lebanon, who is not with us now, but he was present at the meeting. And certainly it was discussed in very general terms, and I think also that the same sentiment was there. The Lebanese people are one of the most creative peoples in our region, and certainly we are confident that they will be able to overcome any difficulties that they face now, and we certainly hope for the very best for Lebanon, and as countries we are committed to help Lebanon in whatever way we can.
We have to wrap up, so just a couple more questions.
Just on Lebanon, was there a good constructive dialogue between the Syrian ambassador and the Lebanese ambassador on this trip? Get on well with it?
Of course there's oddity. I mean, you would assume that, of course, I mean, Lebanon is and Syria are part of the Arab group, and it's very normal to have this constructive dialogue. We always have constructive dialogue and on highest level between our two governments, and it has nothing to do what is happening now in Lebanon is an internal affair. We, of course, respect what the Lebanese government decides on, and Syria's role in the past and still in the future is to support the Lebanese government and people to in whatever they choose. And actually the Syrian position on Resolution 1701 was to support the Lebanese approval and reservations on they have their own reservations on the resolution, and we supported their positions in their approval and reservation on the resolution. So, and it's very normal, and And of course, to talk about Lebanon, I tell you that what is happening in Lebanon now, especially the latest assassination of the minister Jumail, is, I mean, the only party which benefited from all this actually is Israel, because Israel, when it entered Lebanon in 1982 in the invasion, their pretext was to that there is no order in the south, and they accused that the Palestinian factions at the time that they created order and they wanted to impose order. And when Lebanon was free from the Israeli occupation in the year 2000, then the melody of Israel continued by saying that there's no order in the south. Now the opposition is represented in the government, and this is a matter for the Lebanese government to decide also. And the only really benefit was only for Israel at the time. And we should remember that in 1976, when Syria entered Lebanon, it entered not only by request from the Lebanese government, no, it was an Arab summit decision to have an Arab deterrence force to go into Lebanon, and Syria was, among other Arab countries, but Syria was the main component of it because of its neighbor to Lebanon. And all Arab countries, and Syria in particular, played a role in putting an end to the civil war in Lebanon at that time, and to in deterring the Israeli aggression from entering. And the only benefit really was for Israel, because again, just the assassination of al-Hariri in Lebanon was done was a bad choice really for those who killed al-Hariri, because al-Hariri himself was the only one who improved the relation between Syria and Lebanon. And until now, of course, there's no proof, and to aside from the political statements that we hear from the United States or other the big powers, and to take things in the legal process, there is investigation going on, and there is a process that Syria is cooperating with the investigators, and however, if a Syrian is happens to be implicated in this assassination or any other assassination, of course he will be tried in Syria, and he will be considered, as our president said, this is a treason, because this is of course something that will be taken for its crime nature, and it will be looked at in its own discredit, of course. And so this is something that Syria is cooperating with the investigation and will continue to do so, and we really wish to reach a stage to hold responsible for whoever did all these crimes. And of course, together with this, we shouldn't isolate Lebanon from the spectrum. Again, in what's happening in Palestine is against crimes against our people in Palestine. So every crime should be taken for its responsibility and should be discovered in the final analysis. Okay, and just briefly, I just want to say briefly, commenting on what my colleague said, when Israel asked Hamas to recognize Israel, actually in before the peace process in 1991, Israel used to say also that they want the Arabs to recognize Israel, and the Arabs started recognizing Israel in 1991 in the Madrid peace process, and it continued. So it's not really a problem for them, because now if Hamas says, okay, we recognize Israel, then Israel will create another problem, like what Israel has been doing since 1991, because in 1991 all Arabs recognized Israel and existence, and it was renewed, as my colleague from Egypt said, in the Arab Summit initiative in 2002. So it is not a question whether, because only the Arabs are asked. Israel should be asked also to hold its obligations, and Israel should be in the picture more than the Arabs, because Israel is the stronger party and the aggressor party, and they have more responsibilities to offer to the Arabs.
One last question in terms of nuclear disarmament about Iran in particular. There's obviously rising levels of tension there. Did that come up in your discussions? And in which case, what was your message to New Zealand about Iran?
Well, the discussions, what we talked about was basically the broader issue of nuclear disarmament. We did not deal in specific with Iran. And I think on the broader issue of nuclear disarmament, there's complete agreement that nuclear disarmament is very important for the whole world. And certainly that is true for the Middle East. Certainly we are very much committed to a region in the Middle East which is free of nuclear weapons, and indeed free of all types of weapons of mass destruction.
but I mean, Israel clearly has nuclear weapons, and I mean, it seems likely that Iran is probably going to acquire them in order to sort of balance Israel's nuclear weapons, and thereafter we might see Saudi Arabia becoming nuclear armed as well. I mean, the situation is not very encouraging in that regard.
Well, regarding all the Arab countries are members of the NPT. And certainly, I do not envisage any Arab country trying to procure or trying to produce nuclear weapons. That's not on the table. What we are trying to do is exactly the opposite. We're trying to make sure, A, that Israel is brought back into the international fold, into the non-proliferation regime. We cannot have a situation in which we have a massive, or the possibility of a massive weapons program in Israel. We cannot have the continuation of a situation in which there are nuclear reactors in Israel that are not supervised by the International Atomic Energy Agency, and that may or may not be secure in terms of radiation. This kind of situation cannot continue. The international community must take a position on that. And certainly, this applies to Iran. Iran is a member of the NPT, and we all expect Iran to respect its obligations in that regard. And we feel the best approach is to have a very clearly defined system for the entire Middle East, in which no nuclear weapons and no weapons of mass destruction will be allowed. We are willing to go to very stringent measures to ensure that this happens. But certainly, this does require international effort. And it does require an international commitment to nuclear disarmament as a whole.
I just want to comment on this one for my colleague from Emirates, and I don't think I want to speak by them. I just want to say that on the question on Iran, we always, again, like my colleague in Egypt said, that Israel actually is the only country which is not party to the non-proliferation treaty. And Israel, by recognized Israeli NGOs and international reports, acquires more than 300 nuclear warheads. And we look at Iran, for example, if I take Syria, if Syria now announces that we want to build nuclear reactor, because according to the NPT, if you look at the NPT articles, I think Article 3 or 4 of it says that each party to the treaty is entitled to developing a nuclear power for peaceful uses. Now, Syria or New Zealand could just make an announcement that say we want to build a nuclear reactor for peace, just simply as the treaty says, because if there's something wrong in the treaty, well, then we ask the Big Five to change the treaty. So Iran is like just like any other country, developing a nuclear power for peaceful uses, but of course it should be according to the International Atomic Energy Agency. But we again forget that the Security Council, not just the General Assembly, the Security Council, which was the United States and the UK, they asked Israel in 1981 in resolution, famous resolution 487, which is also forgotten maybe, resolution 487, 1981, asked Israel by name, because it was the only country in the region which was asked, aside from Iraq, but Iraq now changed the situation, totally changed. Israel was the only country which was asked explicitly to place all its nuclear facilities under the full scope safeguards of International Atomic Energy Agency. And of course, again, we go to the commitment that Israel is isolated from this responsibility, and we, the Arabs, submitted in the United Nations, and actually Syria, when Syria was party, was a member in non-permanent member of the Security Council in 2002 and 2003, submitted initiative for weapon for Middle East free of weapons of nuclear weapons in the Middle East, and this proposal is still on the table, and all Arab countries share this view.
Right. Well, thanks very much, ambassadors, for those remarks.